grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Everybody, and welcome to this very special Christmas edition of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. I can't thank y'all enough. I can't thank all of our listeners enough on a regular basis for the years of support, the years of listening. We are now going into what will be our fourth year of show, and it's just phenomenal to see the growth, phenomenal to see where we've come, what we've done. The guests that we've had, the amazing shows that we've done out live at places like Mikamoto Auction, all that kind of great stuff, and where we've come to now as not just a show but as a community. People reaching out to us that have listened to shows and saying, hey, you know, I've been electronically harassed. Who can I contact to get help? That kind of stuff. And even guests like our guest this evening, who I ran across on social media, Carlos Cedillo, is a shamanic healer and composer out of the New Braunfels, Texas area. And he is the host of the Plant Music Podcast on Podbean. And that's how I ran across him, actually, was finding that. And then we were connections on LinkedIn, I believe, before that, as composers and musicians. And when I found his Plant Music Podcast, I started listening to it. And it was like, wow, this is just awesome. The fact that somebody is out there recording music made by plants, working with vibration in the way that we have talked about on this show so many times. So welcome to the show, Carlos Cedillo. How are you doing?
Hi, thank you, Christopher. I'm doing wonderful.
Well, fantastic. I am, as you can tell, very excited and enthused to have you on today. This is nerdily right up my alley. But awesome. Aside from that, spiritually right where I am at in the world. I of course have my own religious beliefs, but spiritually, when it comes down to it, I am really someone who believes in the concept of vibration and manifestation. The fact that we coexist with everything around us, and our vibration influences that vibration. To hear someone like you, as we were talking before the podcast here, just that is out there making the same kind of music I am, that's using rare earth frequencies, that's using brainwave frequencies, stuff like that, and recognizing the fact that our bodies can key into these frequency responses that are naturally all around us. Let's kind of start at the beginning here, because you were a composer first, healer second. Let's get into where you come from musically, how you came to be a musician and a composer, and then we'll take a little bit of your journey into the shamanic with frequencies and stuff like that.
Well, I think, okay, now I'm going to have to go back further in time.
Go ahead.
When I was a young man, my father got a job in Caracas, Venezuela. This was in the 1978 to 1980, and I went to a international school there, and one part of the education there was a classical music appreciation class. So I actually got exposed at a pretty young age to a lot of the great composers, Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, etc. So that was a pretty big influence. And then I was into a lot of the progressive rock stuff as I was a preteen and teenager. I loved Yes, and for a while I was into like Rush and definitely Led Zeppelin. And
for just a while?
Yeah. For just a while. I outgrew a lot of that. I still love Yes. Yes is one of my favorite bands.
Sure.
When I went to college to study classical guitar.
Okay.
And I was 17 when I just kind of taught myself and then decided to get real lessons. And I was lucky enough to be one of the first in the first batch of guitar students at the University of Texas. They had just hired a new guitar professor. His name's Adam Holzman. And so I was kind of fortunate to just kind of slip into that program before I was really knew what I was doing on them in the guitar or music in, at all. So, and then got really heavy into jazz. Miles Davis, Coltrane, Sun Ra are my favorites.
Okay.
And things like Mahavishnu Orchestra and Santana. What else? Pretty broad range of the 20th century music composers that were doing them. You mentioned Stockhausen earlier and mm-hmm. Pierre Boulez and just a whole list of those kind of 12-tone composers.
I'm sure the typical list of John Cage, Philip Glass, you know. People and, like that. Even bands like Tangerine Dream
were up there.
Favorite.
Cool. Yeah. So that's the background as I was growing up, that kind of music. Mm-hmm. And then in college, I was studying the classical guitar. You know, a lot of that music, my teacher was really, really tough. He's one of the great guitar teachers in America, but he's really, 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 really tough on his students. And so it was like you had to be exactly precise. You had to have the perfect expression. You had to have, you know, everything, rhythm, tempo, all that timbre, all everything had to be kind of perfect for that. And it was really frustrating in a way because I was listening to all this other jazz stuff also and other music that was a little more far out of the boundaries.
And far from perfect in a lot of rights.
Yeah, and just allowing accidents to happen. So I had another friend at the time that was a bass player. So I'd play guitar and he'd play bass. And we would just get together at his house and kind of get the microphones and amplifiers set up and then just hit record. Okay, we're ready. And just start playing. And so I just got into this improvised music at the same time that I was learning very technical stuff. And I call it spontaneous composition. And then later on, I moved into a lot of the computer music using Ableton. And it's been kind of what the struggle has been for me to find other musicians that were into the same thing and on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
There are a handful here in Austin that were into it, but not enough to kind of start a band.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because it really does loop, especially for musicians making the kind of music that you are, musicians making the kind of music that I do as a avant-garde composer. Even as an electronic musician, it's a strange space that we create in to begin with. Wow.
Yeah, I call it spontaneous composition.
Yeah, and not everybody can do that. Not everybody can deal with that. Not everybody.
Right.
I've had numerous people in my studio just, quote, jamming with me over the many years. And typically after a 20-minute session, because it's like, I don't know for you, but for me, like 5 minutes is a warm-up.
Right.
It's hard for me to compose unless it's a beat-oriented piece. It's hard for me to compose in that way for anything less than 15 minutes or so. And most of the time, whenever I was done, people would kind of look around and be like, wow, that felt weird.
Yeah.
Because it was a very vibrational field. It was very much, I guess, an embodiment of something and of a moment, and of really letting go and releasing of internal energy within myself. And if you're not ready for that, it can be intense.
Yeah. A lot of the great jazz players can get into that.
Yeah.
And just allowing their innate energies, their bio energies to flow through the music. But a lot of other musicians are these singer-songwriters that are dependent upon, okay, this chord and then this chord and then this chord and this melody has to be like this. And they get too attached to the song. And then the whole music industry today is based on this idea that you write a song and you copyright it and that's your song. And then even though in reality, if you listen carefully to all the music, it's all the same. They're all using the 4-5-1 or whatever progressions. And there's just there's a little box that most of the pop music is in today.
Yep.
And a lot of these, I love them to death. Don't get me wrong. I love these, my friend, a lot of friends that are singer songwriters and I love what they do. And,
it's still most definitely an art form. I don't discount any singer songwriter or
it's just
musician.
Not what I do.
I do
something different.
And they utterly appreciate what I do. And they're like, wow, I don't know that I could do that. They could stand up there and improv guitar all day long in a jam band, but to do that is a totally different scenario. And I remember distinctly in Austin, the day I found my buddy Wesley Goins, little shout out there, Wes. He came over one day and we were playing around and I had all my effects set up and he had this bamboo shakuhachi that he'd made. Cool. And we started playing around with just loops and delays and all kinds of stuff. And we made this really long, elaborate piece. And at the end of it, he was like, "Whoa, dude, did you feel that?" And I was like, "Oh man, not again."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Dude, that was freaking awesome. Like, I don't know that I ever felt that playing with anybody before. Like, you think we can make that happen again?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Let's try."
Maybe not exactly.
Hey, not exactly. So we played another piece and he was like, "Dude, this is weird, man. I've never felt this with anybody. Like, this is wild." And like, we immediately formed a band. and cool. Within 6-7 months had written like hours of material to be able to perform live. It was just amazing the synergistic flow that happened once you were with somebody that was on that same vibrational wavelength is really the only way to put it.
Right.
Now, when did you first because the shamanic healing and the vibrational work with music, I think anyway, go hand in hand together.
There's a lot of sonic shaman tools. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's explore that just a little bit before we start really delving into the Plant Music podcast. Because I want you to go into your shamanic background and your background with healing before we get into that.
Cool. Yeah. So after I got out of college, I just felt drawn to go to Mexico. And it's kind of so close, I just hop in my vehicle and go down. And a friend of mine had showed up one day with a National Geographic magazine, and it had a place called Cuatro Ciénegas on the cover of this National Geographic. And it was these pools, they call them pozos, that appear in the middle of this desert. And some of these pools are mineral water, some are crystal clear, some are warm, some are hot, and they're little animals, shrimp and turtles and fish and other beings that only live in these little pools there. So it's like a Galapagos Island kind of place.
Okay.
Very, very unique geography and topography and flora and fauna place.
Yeah.
And so we went there with just a few friends and we were swimming in the pools and having a good time. And then one of our friends was like, hey, come over here. Look at this. And we go look, and there's a huge clump of peyote buttons all around. And,
all right.
We started looking around, and it's like, oh my God, this stuff is everywhere. It was all over the place. We just didn't notice until we're almost ready to leave. It's like, oh my God. So then we went to Real de Catorce, which is an old silver mining town. And that is kind of a mecca for the Huichol Indians and several other Indian tribes that would walk hundreds of miles through the desert, eating nothing but peyote. And then they get up to the sacred mountain, and they walk up the mountain, and there's a labyrinth and a little stone house where they leave offerings. And that is plenty of peyote buttons out there in the desert also. So that became my path. And along the way, we found some crystals as well. So I got some crystals and some peyote. And from that point on, I was definitely hooked, and I would go back and forth into Mexico, always stopping at
Guatemala. On the experience, not on the peyote, people. Just so you understand what he's hooked on.
Oh, yes.
Well, peyote is not addictive. So.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, it's very difficult to get addicted.
Exactly.
Whenever I would get the chance to go down there, I was on my way. That's my first stop. And I went a couple of years, just 2 years ago, with another friend of mine and introduced him to that area. So hopefully we get around there again pretty soon.
Nice.
But so that became a little life path thing for a while, all through the 90s. I would just keep making trips back and forth into Mexico, collecting crystals, found all these other little mining towns, went all the way down to the pyramids in Yucatan. And my father got a job in the Yucatan. And so it all just became a natural thing that I would just go back and forth into Mexico.
Yeah, back in the 90s when you could do that, and it was considerably safer to do so.
I guess it's still safe.
Depending on where you go, it might be even safer now
because they have super highways, toll road that you can go on just really, really fast and get on deep in there. But the Mexican people are some of the friendliest in the entire world
once
you get past the border towns.
Yep.
And then it's plant medicine. So I was connecting with the earth through the peyote plant medicine, with the spirit of the earth. So that was a big thing that led me to connect with this plant music stuff also. What else about that? Oh, there's another little town called Huautla in Oaxaca, where they have mushroom ceremonies. There was a lady, she just passed away, I think, this year, Doña Julieta, that I visited 20 years ago when I first started doing these journeys. And we bought some mushrooms from her, and then I saw her again recently in 2016. I went with a friend and met her again, and we did a full-blown ceremony with her, which was fantastic.
I was going to say, what was that experience like for you? Because most people, of course, their experience with mushrooms is very different. Let's just say it's much more the typical college or camping experience, where there is that party atmosphere about it, as opposed to the reverence for the sacred.
Yeah, I figured out that we've been doing mushrooms all wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You need a little Mexican lady to sing you songs all night.
It is
to have
helpful.
The proper experience.
Yeah.
And the healing of it, it's just a way that you can really dig into your soul and mm-hmm. find the places that need to be shed some light on, I guess. So that was another big part of my spiritual growth. And then getting to go on sacred journeys with the grand elder of the Maya, Don Alejandro Cedillo Perez Oshla. That was a little bit later. That was in like 2007 when I did that. So I was learning all about the Mayan culture as well, the Mayan glyphs, and I became a Mayan calendar shaman. And
explain to our audience what a Mayan calendar shaman is. Exactly what do you do in that capacity?
I follow the 260-day cycle and the long count cycles. There's a 20-day cycle of sacred glyphs, and each day has a discernible energy about it. And things will happen, whether it be in your personal life or on the news, world events, or just something that will happen that will be related to the glyph for that day, for every day.
All right. I guess it's kind of along the lines of astrology, somewhere in that camp, then, is how you would describe it.
Yes, it is a form of astrology, but it's not based on the stars or the position of the planets. It's based on more of a sacred geometry of cycles of time.
Yeah, and that's it. I guess that was a big misconception that people had about the Mayan calendar a couple years ago, whenever, of course, December 21st, 2012 came about.
Yes.
You know, everybody, oh my God, the world's going to end. And I remember my wife and I had gone down to the Yucatan for our honeymoon, and gone to Chichen Itza, things like that. It was absolutely fantastic. Went and had a traditional ritual done and swam in the cenote, all that
awesome.
Kind of stuff. Oh, it was incredible. And that was a moment where I had happened to be able to come across some mushrooms and brought some. And it was a hugely spiritual moment. Absolutely amazing and
awesome.
Beautiful
yes.
to walk around that sacred area with my crystals in that beautiful state of mind. Not where it was party, let's take a whole bunch of mushrooms. It was like, no, let's just have a little bit and enjoy the sacred part of this.
Definitely connect with the cosmos.
Yeah, yeah.
Better.
And I've been there a couple times in my life, and to go and experience it in that way was definitely probably one of the most solemn times I've had on those grounds ever.
Yeah. So it's no accident that we are making this recording on December 21st.
Yeah, I know, right?
Exactly just, 8 years.
Yeah. Wow.
The official Mayan cycle.
Well, that was it. That was one of the big things, was like, oh, wow, we're going just before the solstice. You know, we're going just before it. To have been there right up around that time was awesome. I would have loved to have been there for the ceremony. But so many people had a misconception about the Mayan calendar. And
right.
it's like, yeah, it's really much more of a prophecy in the fact of the cycles are day and night. And one is
right.
the discovery of technology, the day, and then the night is the application of that technology, which is kind of what we're in right now. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We are. So it's all, to me, I call it, it's consciousness expansion time. So we've been locked into this consciousness for about 5,200 years before 2012.
Yep.
And there were certain prophecies in the Mayan writings in the Chilam Balam books that were kind of cryptic, and I was one of the few people that actually had this particular book here to look at and read, and it talked about the return of the ancestors. And so who were these ancestors? And yeah, what I learned from Don Alejandro, the grand elder of the Maya, is that these were the Mayan ancestors who first built Chichen Itza and started the calendar, and they came from the Pleiades. And when they came down to Earth and they taught all of this to the Mayan culture and to other cultures, they would show up, and then they returned back up to the Pleiades. So now, and what happened in 2012 is that they came back, and those of us who were awake enough, we were able to greet these Mayan ancestors, and they would show up in the sky for us as light ships that looked like stars that were moving around the sky.
And you were witness to this.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And I actually did a ceremony on December 21st, 2012 in Wimberley, Texas.
Okay.
At the Unity Church there. And we saw the stars align in a perfectly straight up and down 90 degree line with Orion's belt, and then there is the Pleiades, and Jupiter,
yep,
was aligned up with the Pleiades, and then there is Sirius and Arcturus and other stars in a perfectly straight 90 degree angle from the Earth line.
Wow.
And I think Jenkins, I forget his first name, was one of these authors that was talking about galactic alignment and stuff. And I have another friend, Carl Kalaman, who's written a few books about the Mayan calendar. And they would kind of argue about, well, was this a celestial event or is this a fractal time event? And it's like, well, yeah, they were both right on this stuff. Dr. Kalaman had another day picked. It was October 28th, 2011, that he saw as the culmination of the Mayan calendar. And we also had a big ceremony here in San Marcos, Texas, on that day, where a lot of fascinating things lined up just right for this big ceremony on October 28th, 2011.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's a whole other show in and of itself, just to tell what happened on that ceremony.
Well, yeah. And just so that people get the full grasp of the Mayan calendar and the cycles, explain how that works. Explain the math of the Mayan calendar, because it's very interesting as opposed to our solar calendar that we use.
Right.
And it's incredibly more accurate.
Yeah.
In all actuality.
Yeah, it's a biological calendar is what it is. It is based on the human body, because there's cycles of 13 and 20 that make up their core cycle called the Solkin. And so 20, there's 20 of these glyphs, and so that aligns with the fact that we have, most of us have, 20 fingers and toes. Digits are vestigial. I forget how to say that word.
Vestigial?
Vestigial, based on 20, yes. And so then there's 13, and the number 13 is also a biological number, because we have 13 major joints. The the ankles, knees, hips, wrist, elbow, shoulders, and your neck. It's 13 major joints. So the number 13 is also part of the Fibonacci sequence of numbers. 1 plus 2 is 3, 2 plus 3 is 5, 5 plus 3 is 8, 8 plus 5 is 13, and so on in that sequence. And that is a number and sequence that we find all throughout nature, pretty much no matter where you look, because you're going to find the Fibonacci sequence somewhere in natural, all natural patterns, whether it's with trees or fish or the alignment of the constellations. There are also all kinds of things that you can look at, and you're going to find the Fibonacci sequence. So the Mayan calendar aligns with that. And so following the Mayan calendar puts you in alignment with this real natural scheme of things. Whereas the solar calendar is based on one cycle, only the Earth going around the sun. And so that is not giving you as much information as you're getting when you follow the Mayan calendar. That's a big difference.
Okay. And it's interesting because so much of what we know is based on our concept of time, our understanding of time, even down to vibration.
Right.
It's interesting once you start getting into the history of music to know that at one point C was not 440.
Yeah.
A was not 440. There was a totally different scale that was used.
432.
Yeah, and when you start listening to things in that, it's very interesting to hear the subtle differences between the two.
Right, music is a lot more emotional when you tune down to A432.
Explain all, why that is.
I wish that I could give a rational explanation for that. But it just ties into the natural harmonies again, just like the Mayan calendar does. So when you tune down 432, a lot of the notes when you tune the guitar or the notes values will add up to 9 with their digits, like 432, 4 + 3 + 2 is 9.
Yep.
So all the other notes that you tune to are also going to add up to 9, like that.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, that is originally the Pythagorean scale.
Right.
And that's, at least my understanding, is that's one reason why we cue into it a lot more, because it is much more geometrically based and naturally based, like you were saying, as far as Fibonacci sequence, things like that. Even a friend of mine who is a extremely well-versed musician, I was talking with him about it one night here at my house, and he tuned the guitar to it and started playing, and he was like, wow, that's really interesting. He's like, I'm gonna have to play around with that more, but I really kind of like that.
Yeah, I wish all the other musicians would everything would tune to 440, but
a vibrational revolution with is what we
a
need.
Piano player is gonna hard yeah. to tune a piano all down like very fast to do that. So, but all of this, everything we're talking about, ties into the plant music.
Yeah, you know? Exactly, and that's why I wanted to make that slow progression from music to shamanism to time and understanding time and vibration, and now getting into the plant music podcast that you have on Podbean. Explain to us how you first got the inspiration for this awesome show and what it's all about.
I'm not sure if I mentioned first my friend Anya, who is a new age musician in Austin, introduced me to this plant music machine. She had told me about it on the phone. We talked about it one time. I said, okay, that's interesting. And then I got to go to her house and she hooked up a plant to this machine, and it started making music. And I was like, wow, that's cool. And so we're sitting there talking, and the plant is hooked up to this machine and making music. And as we were conversing, the plant would interject as if it was taking part in our conversation with, you know, melodies would come out in, at right times when we're mentioning deep topics or something. Get faster, you know, the music. And also when you touch the plant, that it would make faster melody.
Wow.
So I was hooked as soon as I saw that. I was like, oh my God, I got to get one of these. It's from this place called Damanher in Italy, which is a new agey spiritual community. And they have a big temple they built, I think, inside of a mountain. And they combine all the different religious mythologies of the world into this one temple. So that's a fascinating thing in and of itself. But they invented this music of the plants machine at this Damanher place. And so there's only two places in the United States that I found that sell these things. One's Damanher in Colorado and another lady in Florida. So the machine that I got is called a Bamboo M. So I ordered it from the lady in Florida and she was sold out. And so the other place in Colorado didn't even have it on their website, but I just think, well, I'll just call them and see if they know about it. And I call them and they said, we just got a box of these in from Italy, like just now. And so I was like, I'll take one of these things. It's a pretty recent thing that I've been using this. So, and then I had to order a special MIDI cable from Italy because I couldn't find one that was this little USB to 5-pin MIDI connection. Mm-hmm. So I had to order that. So that took a month or two to get here. But I could plug in from the headphone jack from this machine into the mixer. So if you find the earliest broadcasts of the Podbean, plantmusic.podbean.com, they grow as you listen to one to the next to the next to the next. Technologically, they grow. But it's been a fascinating thing. So I just started hooking up to all the plants in my yard, all my little potted plants around, and man, it's just so exciting. And all the different plants have their own unique melody patterns. And like a Datura plant has this really kind of forceful, kind of like Wagner-esque chord progressions. Dun, 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 dun. And other plants will just go ping.
And you've got probably, I guess, about 10 tracks total up right now, 10 episodes.
Oh, there's more. There's almost 30 because you have to hit the go to older posts.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I just got on Spotify.
Also. Oh, nice.
So if you find the Plant Music Podcast on Spotify, it lists all of the episodes I have so far, which is getting around 30. So yeah, go back and check those out.
Oh yeah. Cause I mean, this is, this is great. Like you have one from Moldavite, all kinds of stuff. And it's absolutely wild. Whenever you start getting into this, whenever you start looking into, I mean, of course there was research done years and years ago back in the '70s, The Secret Life of Plants, that kind of stuff that kind of put forth the concept that there was some kind of consciousness, and a lot of it couldn't be repeated in labs. But a lot of the work that was done with crystals, with IBM, finding out the your standard, like, I am holding a 4-inch double pointed quartz crystal right now, and to know that IBM did work years ago to show that this exact crystal could hold data.
And it has a beautiful song to play for you.
Yeah. And the fact that each one of these, because of their molecular structure, and their individual unique shape, would resonate at a different frequency.
Yeah. I think also that you have to look back to the work of Wilhelm Reich.
Okay. Yeah.
I you know, the government destroyed a lot of his machines that he made, and he's famous for the orgone accumulator that you could sit in and get healing. But he had other machines that showed that there's energy in human body that just by touching those devices would start wheels spinning, you know. So there's free energy all over the place. And like, I think if some people do things in high school where you hook up a potato to a clock or something and you make it work, you know. So there's experiments that you can do. And I think that this device, Music of the Plants device, must have very similar technology inside of it. I have not gotten to speak with the inventor of it yet to find out exactly what's going on, but it's very similar to the work that Wilhelm Reich was doing.
I'm familiar with a few circuits that I know of that with different probes. You can touch them and get different frequencies where each individual person's salinity is going to give a different result. Stuff like that. I'm familiar with those kind of things. But I'm very intrigued with this device. More intriguing to me is the possible applications of it, the possible uses of it for biofeedback, for being able to, which is more than likely very much what it is a biofeedback machine.
There are a few other inventors that had machines similar to this. I can't think of a name. There was a lady a long time ago that had a machine that there were silver plates you put your feet on, and it connected to these different diodes in this machine, and she can go up and down your chakras and take photographs of your, like a X-ray photograph, but I have no idea how that worked, and the government came in and destroyed all those machines also. So it's tricky territory we're entering on, but I think with the whole 2012 notion of, you know, this is a new time, new consciousness, I think these are going to be making their way into the mainstream very soon.
We are very much up against the rebirth of new age right now, and by that I mean the rebirth of old knowledge, rebirth of older ways of thinking. I just posted an article to the Dudes and Beer group today that was talking about how witchcraft is on the rise as opposed to Christianity. And I think it's because
Jesus was quite magical.
Well, yeah.
He was into this stuff. Sure.
And very much in, if you really start breaking open his teaching and start looking at it through a critical eye, and start studying older forms of Judaic magic, Kabbalah, things like that, the knowledge of the high priests, it was very much in line with what Jesus was teaching on the regular. Which in and of itself made him a dangerous person.
Right.
Yeah, like, you're giving away the knowledge of the high priest to the common people. We can't have that.
Right.
And that was pretty much any religious society in the world. Even to the point of fact of the Mayan society, where the knowledge of the high priest was the knowledge of the high priests.
Right. So, yeah, I think this is all going to tie into what I was doing with crystal healing, And I'm definitely sure. I mean, I have not had people coming in yet to let me test this on them.
Okay.
But I think that, I mean, when you hold these probes in your hand, that your own biological frequency will start to make music. And so I think that once I do a little bit more research and experiments with this, that it should be able to discern musically where people have or need vibrational healing done in their chakra system. So, but that's, like I say, I'm theorizing right now, so I haven't had a chance to test this on a lot of people yet, or anybody.
Well, yeah, and I mean, being able to use this kind of technology to diagnose that kind of stuff, to be able to help realign people health-wise, even using crystalline frequency therapy. Like I was saying before the show, I've gotten huge into tuning forks as of late. And just that pure cyclic tone, that one tone that will help relieve stress or help increase productivity, things like that. There's been a lot of research done with that in the world of entrainment. We talk about it regularly with our guest, Dr. John Hall, and even the technologies that are used for entrainment of the brain, kind of brainwashing techniques, electronic hazing, that use the same concepts.
Monroe Institute Hemisync binaural beat program.
Wow.
That was pretty intense.
Yeah. And that's exactly one of the things that we talked about in our last episode. Was that, and I've got a binaural beat machine. I use binaural beats in my music. It is definitely something that it works. And whenever you're exposed to a frequency on a regular basis, your body will produce that frequency more readily. It's some really, really interesting science. And whenever you start thinking about the fact of, like your music is showing, plants are producing their own frequency.
Right.
Minerals are producing their own frequency. Yeah. So
and furthermore, that we can interact with that.
Yeah.
Communicate through those new frequencies.
Yeah. It's been really very interesting. Some of the stuff that you've been doing, the music that you've been making with these plants, minerals, crystals. What is some of the stuff that you are looking to do in the new year with the Plant Music Podcast?
My friend Anya, I think she's been doing a lot of work. She's been going down to Mexico a lot, so I haven't had a chance to really, really kind of work with her. But we've been talking about setting up a place in Austin where we can have the plants and have the plant music going, and people can come and experience it for themselves.
Cool.
So that's a big thing for the new year, and hopefully going down to Mexico and helping start a permaculture community and institute down there, which will include plant music. And who knows? I'm getting into real estate right now.
Oh wow!
So I need to make some money to support all of this stuff.
Well, and that's just it. Passionate people do passionate things.
Right.
And when I ran across your show, it was just one of those like, wow, this is just incredible. That there are people out there, not only that have a similar mindset, but are doing similar things in a different way. And to see the technology that you're using and the ways that you're applying it and the ways that you're wanting to apply it is absolutely great, Carlos.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for being able to recognize what I'm doing.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people 6 months in, Carlos, would be like, oh, well, you know, I went on it for 6 months and that's about it. But When I first started in podcasting many, many years ago, one of the first articles I read was "Get ready to be lonely." Get ready to be lonely for a while. Unless you're paying like crazy money for advertising campaigns and to get your stuff out there and everything else, like the internet is a pretty organically searched place. And as long as you're putting content out regularly and doing it and doing interesting stuff, it will be found. And it, without a doubt, I guarantee that your stuff will be found. I found it and found it more than interesting and amazing, the stuff that you're doing. And I'm very excited to hear about things that will be coming soon from the Plant Music Podcast.
Yeah, I have to find more things. I'm sure there's more things that I can hook this up to that will make music. I mean, I've been doing all the different plants I have in my yard, in my house, and crystals that I've collected while in Mexico. And so that experience, you know, all ties together now. It's like, why was I collecting crystals in Mexico back then? I was obsessed with that. I was like, I have to get more crystals.
Yeah.
And I have a bunch of crystals that I can hook up to my plant music machine.
I'm not going to lie. I am obsessed with rocks and minerals and crystals. I have a huge collection myself. You're more than welcome anytime you're in Austin to come and scan my rocks and minerals and crystals.
Oh, yeah. That's
with
a great
your device.
Idea.
And
I'll pick you up on that.
Even
sure.
The people who own this house, who now live in California, who we rent from, were rocks and minerals hounds. They were lapidarists. So they went out and gathered specimens. Like I got buckets full of scrap in my backyard of like agate and just huge crystal formations that they were like, ah, well, this isn't cell worthy, but it looks pretty cool in the backyard.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really interesting. So you were more than welcome anytime to come do so. In the meantime, everybody know where they can go to find your work, where they can go to find the music of the Plant Music Podcast, where they can get – are you still doing shamanic and crystal healing? If so, where can people go get that kind of help? Everything else.
Cool. Well, the podcast is plantmusic.podbean.com. And I chose the Podbean site just because it sounds like a plant. Beans in a pod. I grow on a plant. So plantmusic.podbean.com worked out better than any of the other names from other podcast hosts. and then if you want to see what I'm up to personally, I'm not on Facebook. I had to get off of that one after the election. Like there's so much vile.
Speaking of vibrations,
going around.
Speaking of vibrations and what you're
very low.
Out.
Yeah. So I got off of Facebook, but I'm still on Instagram.
Okay.
And that is Violet Flame Ashram, all one word. Violet Flame Ashram, and we can talk more about Violet Flame in another podcast.
Absolutely.
Surprised we didn't get to that. what else? Some of my older stuff is on SoundCloud SoundCloud.com/Cosmic Jaguar. Cosmic Jaguar is a Mayan name that I used to use kind of over that period of my life. You can still see how the music I was doing back then ties in very well to the plant music also. My email, if you just can't wait to get hold of me, violetflamerecords@gmail.com.
All right. And that is where you can go to find everything, folks.
Yeah. I'm on Spotify. Spotify too.
And, you're on Spotify
Plant
now
music
as well.
Podcast. Plant
so,
music podcast.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, there's the good old all-seeing eye of Google. Just go Google Plant Music Podcast, and I guarantee you will find Carlos Cedillo, folks.
Uh-huh. For now, Google is harder to shake off. If I could get off of Google, I would, but they're really domineering.
You're not losing Google, dude.
No, those tentacles are hard to cut off.
So, Carlos, thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
Yeah, thank you.
I look forward to having you on again in the future. I would love to have you on to talk about crystal work, to talk about Violet Flame, talk about more stuff with Plant Music Podcast.
Well, thank you so much. And like I said, I'm so glad that you recognize what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
Few listeners out there that are still a little confused what's going on.
And you know, it's very interesting. I love it. I want to talk with you about that off air. So please do hold the line for me for just a moment. And
sure.
While you're online checking out the awesome Plant Music Podcast, please do, everybody, stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That's where you can find all the episodes. You can also find all of our stuff there on the Dudes and Beer Knowledge Vault, plenty of declassified government programs, hidden knowledge from the public all there, even, you know, stuff from Nikola Tesla, all these kind of folks. I'm going to try to find some reference materials relating to this episode to put in there also. You can also get the great deals from DiamondCBD.com. Go on to DiamondCBD.com. CBD, they actually just legalized hemp. Actively just happened. So CBD will now be legal in all 50 states. They're going to be making it to where you can have it shipped to all 50 states as well. So hop on there during this holiday season. Check out DiamondCBD.com. Use the code Dudes420 to save your 30% on your cart on the way out. And of course, while you're online, check us out on the HC Universal Network, as well as all the other great shows, Talking Sound, Yes But Why Podcast, Gray Matters Radio, Therapy Hour with Rusty Lozano, John Bound Politics, Scary Dad, Gentleman No Class, all those guys. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Until next time, remember, if you can't be good at it. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.